people benefit as well. The aim might be laudable. That doesn't justify the methods, replied Cassiel. Leela felt rage and disgust sear out of her. The mind was working very hard to keep them out of her voice. A thought struck Leela. You said it was important to keep the virus secret, the counselor nodded. But won't people find out about it if you unleash it on Diodatus?
He's done a very good job of hiding himself, replied the counselor. Those who know about him will forget about him, without remembering why. And those who don't won't even know he was a threat.
Nobody will ever find out how he fell. And if anyone does get close to the truth, we've got the Rock as cover. We'll just tell them that the mass memory wipe was a side effect of the sudden, final collapse of his command and control networks.
We don't have time to discuss this, cut in Lee. Diodatus is an existential threat to all of us. We're going to identify anyone who's been working with him, whether they're affiliated with the Pantheon or the Fetch Communion. We know where Diodatus's two bases are, on Earth and on station, and we're going to break them. Then we're going to erase as many memories of him as we can. That's going to wipe him out of the totality too. We'll turn him back into what he always should have been, a completely forgotten has-been.
You can't, Leela told her.
Do you have any other suggestions? Leela shot back.
Cassiel discreetly touched her elbow.
We'll talk back on Earth, the mind whispered inside her. For now, agree. Let them believe we're compliant, so they give us the weapon.
No, Leela told Lee through gritted teeth. We've only got one problem left to solve, Lee continued, looking satisfied. We want the virus to propagate fully through every single part of Diodatus's network. So it's got to start at its core, back down on Earth. You three need to get it in there. She nodded towards Cassiel. It needs to be seeded in the fallen snowflake. She turned back to Leela. And you need to get as close to Diodatus as possible, then open it up. We'll hide it. Nobody will find it until then. Caretaker, you know how Diodatus works. You can help with that, can't you?
The caretaker nodded.
Yeah, guess so.
Leela forced herself to be practical.
How do you think I'll get in front of him? The fallen minds in the pyramid said he wanted to meet you, replied Lee. We'll take advantage of that. You mean I let myself get captured? That's about the size of it. But you won't get hurt. You'll drop the virus on him as soon as you meet him.
Sounds easy enough, Leela replied. She couldn't keep the sarcasm out of her voice.
Remember, discretion, whispered Cassiel in her mind. Leela sighed.
And how long before the Rock hits? She asked Lee.
72 hours, give or take. That's hardly any time. Diodatus is a very dangerous entity. We don't know what he's planning or when he's going to act. And we weren't even sure if you were still alive. We had to move against him, hard and fast.
What would you have done if we hadn't survived?
Same plan, pretty much. Only we'd have had to introduce the virus into his networks through a remote location, the pyramid, that old satellite you found. It probably wouldn't have propagated through all of them, so we planned for ongoing mop-up operations over a period of months, possibly years. On one level, it's a shame that we've got a much more effective option, commented East. The mop-up ops would make marvellous content for my little warriors.
For fuck's sake, muttered Leela under her breath.
What was that?
Said Lee.
Nothing.
Lee raised a disbelieving eyebrow.
So? She asked. Do you think you guys can do it?
He's about a day's journey by flyer, said the caretaker. I can do a deal with one of the air powers, rent some transport, so that's no problem.
Excellent, replied Lee. Not much time left. I'll leave it to you three to work out the finer details between you. Oh, and you can stop the flies. Can you teach us how to do that?
I can zap them because Diodatus is my brother, drawled the caretaker. Our deep structures are pretty much identical. That confuses the fuck out of them. If I give anyone else the fly spray, they get one shot, and then the flies recalibrate against it, and that's it.
Even that would be useful, said Lee.
I don't hand out weapons unless I really have to. I gave the fly spray to Leela because she was on the back foot and she needed it. and because I wanted to get part of myself up to station to help her out. You're all pretty much on top of things, and I'm doing pretty well on the traveling front these days, so you don't need to take it, and I don't need to give it to you. Lee glanced towards East, who shrugged.
The flies won't be a threat by the time the gun kiddies get to them, she said. Breaking Diodatus and his networks will break them.
Totally, agreed the caretaker.
Okay, sighed Lee, if that's the way it's got to be.
One more question, said Leela. We can get in, she swallowed. I think we can get the virus into Diodatus's networks. Cassiel nodded.
We can.
But, continued Leela, how do we make sure that we get Dieter and the other two Diodatus victims out?
We haven't made any plans for that, replied Lee firmly. Trying to reach them could be very dangerous.
A pause.
We advise against it. There's too much at stake here.
No! Exploded Leela. He's our brother, Lee!
Leela, I'm sorry. There was no sadness in her voice. I know how you must feel. She paused.
At least, I can imagine it.
Leela remembered the pressure man in action, stripping all memory of Dieter from Lee's mind and replacing it with a void. Leela and Lee were different in one vital respect. Leela had never doubted that her brother loved her profoundly. That knowledge did not exist for Lee.
You don't remember him at all, Leela realized. That's why you don't care about him.
It's not about caring or not caring, Lee told her coldly. It's just easier for me to see the logical course. The one where we win and Diodatus loses. There is no other way, Leela.
East nodded approvingly. The fetch counselor's face was stony. Leela looked pleadingly at the caretaker, hoping for support. He sighed.
I'm not here to tell any of you what to do. You've got to work this out for yourselves.
Leela looked back to Lee.
He loves you, Leela told her. Just like he loves me. And he saved both of us.
Just let it be, whispered Cassiel in her mind. If we protest too much, they won't trust us with the virus. We can stop Diodatus without using it. We'll rescue Dieter and the others, and when it's all over, you'll find a way of giving Lee back her past.
Chapter 37 The caretaker had to use the whole valley to summon their transport to Diodatus. As soon as the meeting ended and they were back on Earth, he asked a senior worker to join them in the room at the top of the tower. She stood by him as he sketched out some kind of sigil. Bees buzzed lazily around them, honey-gold creatures drifting in the air. He gestured out towards the valley.
Gotta be at least 100 meters across. Needs to be done by nightfall. Ready to light up.
No problem, replied the worker, rolling up the sheet of paper. I've got 20 spares today. They've got the weekend's drinking to work off. They'll be up for it.
The caretaker saw the worker off. Then he turned to Leela and Cassiel.
And now that's all sorted, what's the plan for stopping him? You guys gonna blow his mind with the memory virus?
I don't need to, said Cassiel. The fallen snowflake is the heart of the contagion. If I can reach it, I can mesh with it. Lift all the camouflage off the fallen minds and then destroy it. With the snowflake gone and Diodatus destroyed, they'll be isolated and extremely visible. Easy enough to capture and heal.
She looked towards Leela.
Which only leaves us with the problem of bringing Dieter back and breaking Diodatus.
Can you get me into the Shining City? Leela asked Cassiel. The mind nodded. I'll find Dieter in there. I'll do what I can to win him back. And then I'll go after Diodatus. He wants to see me. I just need to get myself caught. But I don't know how I'll break him.
Can't rely on Dieter, she sighed.
Maybe we do need to think about deploying the virus. It was a dead weight inside her, squatting at the back of her mind and causing a noticeable lag in her thinking.
No, said Cassiel firmly. It's the wrong solution. It's a political tool as much as an offensive one.
It protects the Fetch Communion and gives the Fetch Council a bargaining power with the gods. Even in that context, it's problematic. Leela felt a kind of shiver run through the mind. And it's never been deployed against totality minds. Our relationship networks are far more complex than yours. It might go completely out of control. Leap across to the uncorrupted minds and destroy us just as efficiently as Diodatus would. Anyway, we have far more effective weapons at our disposal. I'm one of them. The skull face is another. The caretaker nodded.
It's pretty impressive.
But won't he have defenses? Asked Leela. And anyway, it's built to work on human-scaled entities. How could it hurt a god?
You've barely used it against him, replied Cassiel. You hit a couple of fallen minds before he properly went after any of us. Chances are, he hardly even knows it exists.
And for entities built like me and him, chipped in the caretaker, it's a hardcore piece of kit. It forces sensory circuits into overload. Both of us watch over entire cities. Our perception centers are far more widely extended and complex than yours. If the skull face does its job and forces them into a closed feedback loop, well, the damage would be severe. Definitely crippling, possibly fatal. And his defenses won't do much against it. None of us ever planned for that sort of attack. We've never had to think about fetches down here.
Cassiel nodded. Use that. Delete the virus.
I'm with her, agreed the caretaker. That thing freaks me out. Too close to what Diodatus would do.
You don't beat your enemy by becoming him. Rewriting people sucks, no matter who's doing it to who.
But what if he does know about the skull face? Asked Leela.
I'll help you hide it. He'll never find it. He smiled gently. Then you've just got to get in front of him. And it looks like he's very keen to meet you.
Half an hour later, the caretaker beckoned Leela and Cassiel to the window.
Check it out.
As Leela moved across the room, she felt a fresh lightness within her mind. Now that she'd deleted the memory virus, she was once again simply and only herself.
This is how we get in touch with the air powers, the caretaker told them.
The work party had already stretched out a third of the sigil, painting white lines across the valley. As Leela watched, every so often slowing herself to nudge time along, apparently disconnected lines resolved into coherent forms. There was a bird, sharp, straight wings leaping out at either side, a long beak reaching forward from it, and two stick figures next to it.
A hummingbird, explained Mandala. With you two next to it, he pointed. That's a spanner. Then there's a cloud spider.
Four legs reached forward, four reached back, all from a narrow body that bulged into a circular abdomen at the rear and spiked fangs at the front.
And the last one represents Diodatus.
It was a skeletal face topped with a stylized crown.
It's lovely, but how's it going to get us to him? Asked Leela.
She'd set a counter to tell her how long until the rock struck. It stood at 68 hours.
Isn't it a bit slow?
It's the speed it needs to be, replied the caretaker. And we're sending out a very strong, very specific message to just the right people. We've got two people needing flight. We offer mechanical support in return. Please take the safest route. Our destination is Diodatus. We'll ask them to drop you both on the edge of the city. Then you guys can make your way through those buildings he's been tying together to his tower and the fallen snowflake.
You're not coming with us? Asked Leela.
You're disappointed, he chuckled. I'm touched. But I'm an old man. I'd only slow you down.
We wouldn't have got this far without you, Cassiel replied.
Yeah, but now you're 100% again. You guys make a hell of a team, you know. You really don't need me anymore.
Please,
said Leela. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't. Now I've found myself again, I've got responsibilities. A whole city of people to look after. And even if I could leave them, well, this body's remeshed with my digital systems. If I tried to separate them, that'd break the flesh. Memory crash. Who knows what else?
What if we don't stop Diodatus? Will the city be safe from him?
The caretaker chuckled.
He hasn't got to us for centuries. He won't now. He could try and pay some of the air powers to attack us. But we do maintenance work for them from time to time. Shit they can't handle themselves. They won't want to blow us up. Anyway, I put out feelers, trying to work out what he's up to. He's maxed out his credit buying deuterium from the sea powers for his fusion reactors. Couldn't afford to put the zap on us, even if anyone had take the job.
You talk to them, too?
We keep in touch, the caretaker replied. They're really alien motherfuckers, even worse than the air powers. Hard to understand, and they hate coming topside. But they've got stuff we need, and we've got stuff they need. So every so often, we send someone down to the beach for a chat.
They descended the side of the tower in a glass-walled lift, the desert rising up to meet them. It was almost night. Orange light threw shadows across the valley. Clouds rolled in soft patterns, dusted with brilliance by the sunset. Soon night would come, and all would be dark. All but the shimmering lights of the city. A refuge they were about to leave far behind. Leela shivered. Two of the caretaker's people waited at the bottom of the stairs, holding the pressure suit up between them. It looked a little cleaner. The broken faceplate was covered over with blank white plastic. Its shoulder cameras hung limply down, peering sadly towards the ground.
Fully charged, serviced as best we could. There for you if you want it, the caretaker told her.
Safer if you can move independently, commented Cassiel.
And it's just the suit? Asked Leela.
What else would it be? Replied the caretaker,
and then he understood.
Oh, I'm sorry. We couldn't get your passenger out. The suit's seals are all jammed shut, and the whole thing's pretty fragile. If we tried to force our way in, we might have borked it. So the dead dude's still in there.
Leela looked at the suit's blank face and imagined the blanker one behind it. She remembered the skeleton's presence, the shock of discovering it, and then the quiet companionship it had gifted her. She felt a sudden kinship with it. Like her, it was a relic of a completed life, cast forward into an uncertain future.
No need to be sorry, she said. I got quite used to it. We've got a lot in common.
Cassiel strapped Leela's disc onto the suit. Then the three of them strode out into the valley.
Our ride request is good to go, the caretaker told them. We'll thank the guys who put it together, then it's showtime.
The wind sent dust dancing across boulders and depressions. Leela remembered being alive. She imagined the dust catching in her throat, making her cough and wheeze. But now it couldn't reach her. It pattered against the hard skin of the pressure suit, the white noise of its impacts blurring the sharp, rhythmic groaning of the suit's servo motors. The caretaker and Cassiel were ahead of her. She queried the mind and felt her open up, their two consciousnesses touching. She was surprised to see that Cassiel was fascinated by Lee.
She's you, explained Cassiel. Absolutely you. How could she be anything else? But she's you, brought up with only physical needs met. She doesn't remember anyone ever showing her kindness. So she thinks that she doesn't need to care about other people because they've never cared about her. She can only see them as competition.
The caretaker was a little ahead of them. He reached the work party first.
This is so beautiful, he effused. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
His bees weaved between the workers. No problem, Mandala, one of the workers replied. Leela and Cassiel thanked them too.
Hey, really, we're happy to help.
Hope you guys get where you need to go.
They followed the caretaker further out into the valley. His stride lengthened as he pushed into the gathering gloom. Cassiel moved easily with him. Leela had to go quickly to keep up, stumbling and tripping across the uncertain ground. At last he stopped, turned, held his arms out and called out.
Here we are!
Two thin white lines leapt away from his feet, spearing off into darkness.
Tip of the hummingbird's beak. Watch!
He pulled a lighter out of his pocket. A pinch of fire flared out between his fingers. He knelt down and touched the flame to one of the white lines. There was a whoosh, and the line became a sheet of glowing flame. Leela and Cassiel jumped back. The caretaker cackled wildly. Fire danced out across the valley floor, running along the glyphs that the work party had mapped out, writing a query to the sky in hot light. What now? Asked Leela.
We wait for someone up there to get our message.
Above them, the clouds shimmered, the lightning within them snapping sudden blankets of brightness across the valley. Detail leapt into being, then vanished. Thunder rumbled in the distance. The fire threw a fury of light and heat up at it all. Leela moved a little closer to it, enjoying how her senses registered its warmth, how the suit felt ever so slightly less rigid as it warmed. Bones shifted, peacefully clicking against each other. Cassiel glowed soft purple beside her, a different and far more enduring kind of beacon.
How long will the fire last? Asked Leela.
Long enough, said the caretaker.
A little later, she said, mightn't it rain?
It doesn't rain. As it turned out, time killed the fire. Leela's counter fell to 62 hours. She tried to pretend that the flames weren't sinking down, but they were.
Tried to ignore her suit's sensors as they slid back into cold, but soon the change had to be acknowledged. The caretaker stared up at the sky, face taut with hope. His bees slept within his shirt. Cassiel said nothing. The flames died down entirely. The lightning showed ashes, releasing the last of their heat back into the night. A pale absence of darkness in the east hinted at dawn.
So, what next? Asked Leela.
Well, looks like they didn't see us.
The caretaker scratched the back of his head, an apologetic look wrinkling his face.
More fuel back at the ranch. We'll try again tomorrow.
We don't have time. We have to get over there now. If we can't get to Diodatus before the rock falls, we'll lose so much.
Cassiel stepped between them.
Mandala, she said, assure me of this. All that's needed is that symbol, shining brightly. That's right. He sounded deflated. It's a piece of brand iconography. Resonates with the minor air powers, the messengers.
He looked up at the clouds, running his hand through his hair.
I don't know where they've gone, he said. Usually one of them running around up there.
Maybe it wasn't bright enough.
Could be. It's a stormy night. Would have sent them high up above the cloud cover. Harder for them to spot it.
He turned back towards the city.
Maybe I can get a quick refill before the sun comes up. Try again.
No.
Cassiel stepped towards the nearest line. The smoke had died down, the fuel all burned away.
No time for that.
She knelt down and reached out to touch both hands to the channel.
I'll take care of it, she told them.
Then she started to melt.
Her head was the first part of her to go. It fell in on itself, becoming liquid and running down her arms and into the channel. As her neck and then her shoulders went, her arms merged, then collapsed.
An instant, and all that remained of her was a pair of legs kneeling in the dust. It was like watching speeded-up film of a candle burning itself down. Then they went too. The last of her poured itself into the groove. Leela looked out over the plain. It took a minute or two for the nanogel to roll out across the whole design, slowly filling it with a soft, barely visible purple light. Leela imagined an invisible giant sketching out patterns with luminous ink.
"Fuck," whispered the caretaker.
Leela sent out a query to Cassiel, assuming that, even though her body had dissolved, her mind would still be present. But there was only incoherence. Cassiel's deep self was gone. Shoals of memories swam together, connected in the loosest, most basic ways. Leela pushed beyond them, searching for personality traces, and found nothing more sophisticated than a very basic, endlessly repeated code block. It instructed units of nanogel to spill out in their most liquid form, occupy the channel, and, once they'd filled as much of it as possible, pulse out a series of brilliant flashes. Then they were to reunite with each other. Each unit held a tiny fraction of memory, and each memory contained within itself implied connections to other memories, other moments. Those connections would guide each component of the mind, showing it its place within the whole. And so Cassiel would reform herself. Leela pulled herself back out into the world. All that remained of Cassiel was a liquid thread of nanogel. After a few moments, it started to pulse with bursts of brilliant light.
"Fuck!" yelled the caretaker.
Leela imagined him stumbling away, bees waking to veer crazily in the shining air. She couldn't see him, couldn't see anything but the purple-white aftermath of the nanogel's brilliance. She shut her cameras down and turned away herself. Instinct made her cover the space where her face would have been. Bones creaked within her. The light flashed out again. The suit's sensors registered its power. Mandala swore. She wondered how the blaze looked from his city. She imagined his people telling stories about a mind who fell down from the sky, then shouted right back up at it. She heard a panicked buzzing. It occurred to her that she should protect him. "Are you there?" she yelled, then followed his agonized voice to find him. He lay in the dirt. She sunk to her knees and wrapped her arms round his head. That was how they rode out the remainder of the pulses. After a while, her suit stopped registering new flashes.
"Caretaker?" she asked.
"Mandala?"
"Has it really stopped?"
he asked, his voice riven with shock. "I think so. You're all right?"
"Me and the bees are a little shaken up," he replied. "But we're okay," he sighed. "I wish she'd warned us."
Leela cautiously let one of her cameras open up. The night came back into being, its darkness broken only by the gentle flicker of lightning. She turned it to inspect the geoglyph. It was dark. Cassiel was a part-formed silhouette. Her hips completed themselves and her torso started to grow. "She's coming back."
"Good," sighed the caretaker, struggling to his feet. "I should have warned the city, at least. Hope nobody was blinded." "Glad I wasn't. I've only just got these eyes."
Leela queried Cassiel again, but there was no reply from her deep self, only chirps from tiny, scurrying units of nanogel as they raced round, trying to relocate the order that defined the mind. Leela stood up and inspected her. Her body was nearly complete, but her skin was a turmoil of tiny whirlpools. She stood as rigid as a dead thing, swaying gently in the breeze. Leela reached out to steady her.
"Is she all right?"
asked the caretaker, concern replacing anger in his voice.
"I hope so."
Leela queried her again. There was no response. A pause. Then another failure. Cassiel's absence was dizzying. Then there was a small voice in her mind.
"Leela."
"Cassiel?"
"Leela?"
A long pause.
"Yes, I remember you."
The mind slumped forwards into Leela's arms, sending her staggering back. Their minds touched. Interfaces reformed. Leela recovered herself and supported Cassiel.
"Thank the gods you're okay,"
she whispered, the tiny loudspeakers making her quiet voice crackle. Then she pulled back.
relief blending with frustration. But why didn't you warn us? It was so bright, and such a big risk. What if you couldn't reform?
The fire didn't work. We needed something better as quickly as possible, and the risk was minimal.
Let's hope it worked, said the caretaker, gazing up at the empty skies.
It did, replied Cassiel. She pointed. A section of cloud had a perfect circle carved into it. Beyond it, a higher layer of cloud flickered with indescribable colors. It took Leela a moment to realize that the low rumble she could hear wasn't just more thunder.
Cool, said the caretaker.
What is that? Asked Leela.
As flies are to Diodatus and bees are to me, so that little beauty is to the powers of the air, the caretaker told her.
A dark silhouette appeared in the circle. The flyer dropped towards them, its wings folding back into itself, and its engines roaring as it slowed itself to land. Chapter 38. The craft landed like an insect, coiling long wings into itself and burdening fragile legs with weight. There was a long, low descending whine as its turbo fans span down. Then the pilot was out and lumbering towards them. Dressed in black and wearing a dark helmet that reached down to clasp the top of his mouth. He haggled with the caretaker in a language that neither Leela nor Cassiel recognized. The skin around his jaw was pale. It looked parchment dry. Between its ragged edge and the helmet there was a white strip, a few millimeters wide, that after a few moments Leela realized was bone. Connector cables dangled from his head and forearms. It looked as if he'd been sealed into his flight suit. She wondered how old he was. At first, she pitied him. But when she saw the other, far less autonomous crew members, she realized that he was very fortunate. Two of them were installed in the craft's front fascia, embedded between twin forward-facing windows. One was only a head. A plastic strip protected its eyes and part of its nose. The rest of its flesh had been stripped away. Wires and circuit boards covered some of the bone. As she and Cassiel moved past the bulbous pilot's pod towards the passenger area, she noticed its eyes following her. Teeth clacked together. The one beneath it was a head and a torso. Arm stumps reached up, disappearing into the craft's fuselage. Several antennae were mounted on its ribs, wires reaching out from them into its eye sockets. The torso twitched a little, in time with the clacking teeth. There were human components wired into the interior, too. The navigation computer was perhaps the most shocking. It was a head, sitting by the pilot's seat, chanting what Leela assumed were instructions and coordinates. Leela looked back when the flyer's door closed, and saw that the arms that pulled it shut were muscle-woven round a metal strut. A few seconds and the flyer lifted off. There was minimal weave overlay within it. What there was entirely practical, supporting a few navigation and control panels. There was no pretense that the craft was anything other than its piecemeal self. She let her cameras find a window, and did her best to lose herself in the passing world. Her counter read 58 hours. She held her pendant and let its weight comfort her. Dawn came to the desert. The western sky was rich with color, the low clouds shining orange, red, and purple.
It's very beautiful, said Cassiel.
There was a pause. Desert flew by, softened by the brilliant dawn. Dunes were frozen waves.
The virus. You regret deleting it, don't you?
Memories of the attack rose up in Leela. It's a terrible weapon, she said. But what if the skull face doesn't work? What if Dieter won't help me?
Memory weapons are an obscenity, Leela. We've both been wiped. We both know it, from our own experience.
Leela remembered Totality search teams combing station for fragments of nanogel, just after the end of the soft war.
They'd been recovering memories. They'd brought nearly all of them back. She remembered putting herself back together after the blood and flesh virus hit her.
Oh, you're right. But if Diodatus survives all this, if he finds a way of coming back, well, who knows how it could start to spread again, where it could end, she sighed. Maybe Lee was right. Maybe she does see more clearly than either of us.
No.
Cassiel's voice was firm.
If we rewrite our shared past to stop Diodatus from rewriting our shared past, then there is no real difference between us.
Her voice lightened.
It's hard, but the easiest path and the right path are often two different things. Think about it, Leela. Your sea were right.
Leela turned back to her own window and once again sat and watched the landscape roll by. She still hadn't quite come to terms with the flatness of the horizon and the grey open sky. They crossed a sea, slow waves turbid with pollution. And then there was land again. Every so often there were scoured traces of towns and cities. All were sketched out in exhausted shades of brown and grey, like images half dashed down on aging paper then forgotten. Leela imagined weaponized weather systems ripping away at the landscape, mobile buildings skittering to avoid them. Time passed in silence. Cassiel didn't want to talk. Leela assumed that the mind was conserving her strength.
How much longer? She shouted forwards. 2.7 hours to our recon point. Then we land, wait for darkness. That'll be 4 or 5 hours, then insertion.
She assumed it was the pilot speaking. Its voice was strained. Leela remembered how it had plugged itself into the control panel, the intimacy with which wires had groped their way into the holes drilled into its helmet. She let time judder forward again. The landscape flickered. Daylight burned stronger. The plain outside was full of buildings. Leela leapt back into normal time. Wow. There was a central cluster of 20 or 30 skyscrapers, with suburbs of smaller buildings extending out beyond them for a few kilometers. A whole city. At last. I asked the flyer to circle it, Cassiel told her. It's fascinating. Are any of the buildings arranged in rings, like in Diodatus's city? Nothing like that. We're looking at something very different here. It's a living city. The flyer banked, turning across the suburbs. Leela gazed down, watching mobile buildings run free in the wild. The city's geography was constantly changing. Small industrial blocks, housing units and recreational facilities, skittered around each other on jerky metal legs. They moved with a light swaying motion. Leela thought back to all the inert structures she'd seen on Earth. It's amazing, seeing them actually moving. A very imaginative use of anti-gravity technology, agreed Cassiel. Features that in any static city would be permanent were constantly changing and shifting. The buildings would settle into a particular formation, rest within it for a moment, then suddenly leap up and seek out a new shape for themselves. It was as if the whole city was in permanent dialogue with itself, constantly trying to find the best way of being. It had clearly forgotten that its fundamental property should be the kind of stasis that helped its inhabitants feel secure. But perhaps that wasn't a problem.
I've run multiple scans, said Cassiel. All organic material is post-mortal. Human bodies disassembled, repurposed as components.
She nodded towards the front of the flyer.
Like our crew.
Gods.
It's a lot like the totality's relationship with the machines we operate. You've seen how flexible nanogel is. Sometimes we flow into machines and become their nervous systems. I think the post-mortal humans down there have the same sort of relationship with the buildings that support them.
She looked across the planet.
Earth's environment is very hostile. It's a sensible choice.
The suburbs ended.
building heights rose and they were flying through skyscrapers. Most moved in a stately, ponderous way, their bulk making them far slower than their smaller companions. A matched pair of buildings caught Leela's eye. "What are they up to?" she asked. Each one had an unglazed facade, facing its twin and bristling with activity. Hundreds of wires and cables connected the two buildings, crisscrossing to form a complex, bustling web. Some of the cables were taut and had pulleys mounted on them. Heavy loads shot to and fro across them, others hung untensed. Leela assumed that they were some kind of power or data link. There were claws mounted on hydraulic arms. Some reached deep inside the opposite structure to pull out carefully prepared pallets. Others just snatched at their partner's structural elements, greedily snatching them out and bringing them back to dump on their own side. Leela found it hard to make sense of the scene. "Are they fighting?" she asked, as the chaos continued.
"Not quite," replied Cassiel. "They're exchanging construction and self-definition materials."
"I'm not sure I'm any clearer, Cassiel."
"They're mating," Cassiel sighed heavily. "I thought you humans saw sex in everything. Yet here it is, right in front of you, and you're blind to it."
"What?" Leela was astonished. "I never thought that buildings could fuck."
"You never thought that minds could make love, either. And yet..."
Leela blushed.
"Not just that," continued Cassiel, fascinated. "There's one giving birth."
It was a large skyscraper, squatting on its spider legs. It shuddered gently. There was a movement, but not on its broken facade. Pneumatic arms swung to and fro at its base, apparently pulling something out from it. It shook itself, and the emerging shape fell down in a half-controlled way. Arms tugged at it, straining, and the building shook again. And all of a sudden, the burden it had been trying to free dropped out of it. There was a vast metallic roar, audible even over the high whine of the flyer's engines, and then an equally loud crash as an egg-shaped structure landed on the ground. "The Pantheon said it was all war machines and violence down here, nothing like this."
"They're afraid of Earth, and they barely remember it, so they've only ever shared part of the picture. I'm sure they could never have imagined anything like this. These buildings, these cities, are a new life form, Leela. Like us minds, like you fetches. A natural evolution of what came before."
The flyer was back over the teeming suburbs again.
"The totality is passionately concerned with this kind of new life. I hope we can share news of its existence." She paused. "We don't know if these herds have any sort of links with Diodatus. The memory virus might have attacked them too."
They watched for a few minutes more, low clouds burning orange above them. Leela didn't want to imagine the virus running riot in whatever sort of consciousness the city might possess.
This living city.
At last she asked, "Have you seen enough?" She didn't want to imagine the virus running riot in the minds of this living city. Cassiel nodded.
"We should keep moving."
"Let's go!" Leela shouted forward to the pilot. The flyer shifted beneath them, turning, then accelerating.
"Not long until we land and wait for darkness," Cassiel said. "And then we'll infiltrate Diodatus's city, rescue Dieter, and break Diodatus."
"I hope so," replied Leela. She sank back into her seat.
"I hope so."
Chapter 39. Night fell. The flyer brought them in low and fast, snarling meters above the ground to avoid radar. It veered up and down, right and left, close hugging the desert's contours. Engines roared, crushing Leela and Cassiel back into their seats. Then they cut out, and there was only the whistling roar of air over the flyer's fuselage. The windows were black with deep night. Leela's timer read 36 hours.
"Build up speed. Switch to anti-gravity only,"
Avoid detection, whispered Cassiel. Very effective insertion strategy.
The craft still jinked left and right, up and down. Aileron shifts accenting the air's roar. But only momentum pulled them forwards. They were a bullet, hurtling unpowered towards their target, ready to inflict lethal damage on impact. Seconds passed. The aircraft shook. Deceleration threw them forwards, seat restraints crushed them. There was a sudden vertical drop. Cassiel was translucent again. The flyer's door fell open. Webbing dropped away. The pilot waved urgently. A choir of dead faces shouted urgent commands from the control panel. Run! Now! Building to right! Cover! Cassiel was out of the door, then Leela. The flyer lifted as she jumped, its turbofans howling. Dust leapt up, then the wind and the roar shrank as it turned and fled. She was surrounded by buildings. A dark mountain rose up behind them. Cassiel reached the building ahead. Leela sprinted after her. The flyer's boosters roared in the distance. Spotlight beams lanced down the avenue, white lines piercing the night. None of the buildings moved. The suit's cameras flared. The flyer was already out of their reach. Leela crashed through a doorway to join Cassiel in darkness.
There'll be patrols. A search. We need to keep moving, said the mind. The suit's retained its charge?
It's at 60%.
That'll do. A pause. Diodatus's tower and the snowflake are north of here.
They moved through the city like ghosts. The patrols came. Flyers skimmed between buildings. The night was a tangle of torches and searchlights. There was cover everywhere. It was easy to duck down and hide whenever needed. Easy to listen out for the dry buzzing shouts of the search parties. Cassiel tracked the fallen mines for Leela.
Three close by.
Then?
A pair. A block north.
When their pursuers got too close, she pulsed out confusions and they'd slip past them.
What I'm built for, she told Leela.
And a little help from the caretaker. He knows all about blowing mines. But there were so many searchers. Cassiel could confuse small groups, but altogether they formed a network too large for her to affect. Her pace slowed. Leela and Cassiel stopped moving forward. Their world grew smaller and smaller as the searchers' net closed around them.
They're everywhere, hissed Cassiel.
Can we hide in one of the buildings?
We'd be trapped.
The darkness flickered with jagged shards of torchlight. Shouts buzzed out in the night. Their pursuers made no effort to hide their confidence.
They want us to think there's no way out, commented Cassiel. They want us to panic.
There was a pit beside a broken building. They flung themselves into it. A sheer wall hung above them, shattered window glass, pitted concrete, narrow columns ending in jagged breaks, stories of empty balconies.
Can you climb up there?
The flyers would see us.
We need a distraction.
Leela probed the suit systems. Menus appeared in her mind. She raced through them, thinking commands into its control center.
Unhook me, she told Cassiel.
An instant of blurred motion, and Cassiel held Leela's disc. There was still remote control. The suit leapt out of the pit and ran. Leela saw and heard through it. She felt every lurch and stumble as it crossed the rough ground. Fallen mines shouted and gestured.
It's working, said Cassiel. Now we go up.
A warning flashed in Leela's mind. The disc's wireless transmitter was weak. The suit would soon be out of range. Leela thought commands.
Run at full speed. Evade all pursuer groups. Disregard all damage alerts.
The suit acknowledged her. Then it was gone.
Leela was blind and deaf.
She snatched at Cassiel's senses. They were halfway up the facade, leaping from balcony to balcony. None of the searchers had noticed them. Above, the mountain loomed up, a round mass darker than night. Cassiel glanced back into the street. Far beneath them, the suit ran, kicking up dust. Fallen mines converged on it. There was a rattle of gunfire. The suit staggered, then recovered itself. The cordon was ragged. The suit leapt for its weakest part and burst through, breaking it. A mob of fallen mines hurtled after the suit. Flyers roared past stories below. Cassiel rounded the corner of the building. Leela imagined the skull, grinning endlessly as the suit ran its last. The true dead had saved them, and through them perhaps both station and the totality.
"Good job," said Cassiel.
The street beneath was empty. Shots rang out in the distance, echoing off the skyscrapers. There was shouting.
"Now we find Diodatus's tower," said Cassiel.
She clambered back down to street level and sprinted north. Leela's disc strapped to her back. Tower blocks hid the mountain. At first, the city was a dead jumble of buildings. Order started to appear. Skyscrapers stood in circles. Girders crossed from facade to facade, uniting them. There were round, dark globes in the middle of each ring, studded with small lights.
"I'm picking up weave overlay," said Cassiel.
"Same kind of network the flies were sharing in the pyramid. All this is another outskirt of the shining city."
"Shall we open it up?" asked Leela.
She nudged the cuttlefish. It reported readiness.
"We'll scout out Diodatus's tower and the fallen snowflake first."
Darkness started to turn to light.
"There are inhabitants, too," said Cassiel.
"I can't see them," said Leela.
"Listen. Large marching groups."
Leela tuned into Cassiel's audio systems. A regular shuffling footstep tramping filled her mind. Cassiel's path through the streets became a zigzag.
"Avoiding them.
What are they?"
"Large groups of humans, shepherded by mines."
"Looking for us?"
"No evidence of a search pattern. They're all moving directly away from Diodatus's tower, fanning out into the city."
A pause as she listened again.
"So many of them."
The timer ticked down to 35 hours. Sun Li's rock would land, deleting this dead place. A great threat would vanish.
But so much history. And so many lives would be lost, too.
Sadness surprised her.
"Dieter'll hate it," she thought. "Then I'll get him out."
"We're approaching the tower," whispered Cassiel, snapping Leela out of her reverie. They'd stopped inside one of the building rings.
"We'll recce from up there," she said, pointing up at one of its tower blocks.
The sky glowed softly above it. Cassiel looked around the piazza and then towards its center. There was another globe there. Leela saw that some of the small lights were moving. She could make out human shapes.
"What is that?" she wondered.
"It's a fusion reactor," said Cassiel. "Like the ones in the wart. Pretty much identical design."
"Is there time to zoom in on the lights?" asked Leela.
"I'm curious. Looks like they're attached to people."
"Not quite people," chuckled Cassiel.
A crash zoom and Leela was face to face with death. Milky eyes hung in a glistening face. Scraps of flesh clung to pale bone. There was no jawbone. The tongue was a dry leather strap hanging down and swaying. Flies punctuated the image.
"Fuck!"
Cassiel zoomed out a little. A rope sling held the creature to the dome. Its body had the same used-up look as its face. Torn flaps of skin fluttered off scrawny muscles and yellow bones. Organs pulsed wetly. Black specks crawled everywhere.
"They march and they build," said Cassiel. "All under fallen mind direction. They have become Diodatus's lieutenants, here and on station."
The creature's add-ons glittered as it moved. A limp backpack hung off its shoulders. Its bony hands were wrapped round a spanner. It worked the tool in short, sharp jerks, tightening a bolt. The light was a torch strapped to its forehead. An upside-down triangle glistened in its chest.
"At least you guys get a little seniority under him. All the humans who work for him end up as sweatheads."
"These aren't sweatheads. They're something much older. Centuries, by the look of it." Cassiel zoomed out a little more. The reactor crawled with the dead, each bearing its own light.
each working to fix one small part of a great system of cables in place. A single fallen mind squatted at its peak, overseeing them. A square absence set in its chest.
"What are they doing?" wondered Leela.
"Wiring the reactor to the buildings. Wiring all the buildings together. The caretaker said Diodatus was buying up deuterium. Must be to power all the reactors."
"Maybe he wants to get the buildings walking again," speculated Cassiel. "Bolting them all together makes defense and attack easier. Like circling the wagons, except this circle can move. Perhaps he's going to celebrate the fall of station with a little conquest down here, going after living cities. They're probably pretty resource rich. And there's the caretaker too. He could be winding up to destroy him at last. If he controlled the totality, he'd probably be able to take on the air and sea powers as well.
Diodatus ruling the earth." Leah shuddered. "That's a horrible idea."
"If he enslaved us and destroyed station, he'd rule the solar system too. So we're going to stop him."
Cassiel zoomed back out and looked up. "Let's get climbing."
It took her a couple of minutes to reach the top of the building. Identical windows flew past. Leela glimpsed more decaying figures through them, lying still on metal pallets.
"The whole place is full of them," she said. "The fallen minds must be marching them out to fill the buildings. Definitely some sort of attack force."
Leela thought about her brother. He'd talked about creating an army.
"Gods," she muttered. "Do you think these are the sleepers Dieter's been waking?"
"Could be. But he thought they'd attack station. I don't know how this lot would ever get up there." Dieter had been lied to again.
"Good thing too," thought Leela.
"If they did get up there, they'd cause havoc," mused Cassiel. "The Taste Refresh Festival would make it very easy for the flies to rewrite everyone's memories."
They reached the top of the building.
"Done," said the mind, as she pulled them up onto a flat roof. "We'll have a good view of Diodatus's tower. Can plan our way in."
Leela tried not to think of the dense mass of decayed creatures stacked up beneath them. Cassiel stood up and turned to look out towards the tower. It was where they'd expected it to be. It had a twin,